Blog Talk Radio.
Architect, doctor, maybe an actress, but nothing comes easy. It takes much practice. Like, I met a woman who's becoming a star. She was very beautiful, leaving people in awe. Singing songs, Lena Horne, but the younger version. Hung with the wrong person, got a strong one that. Sniffing up drugs, all in her nose. Could have died so young, now looks ugly and old. No fun, cause now when she reaches for hugs, people hold their breath, cause she smells of corrosion and death. Watch the company you keep and the crowd you bring, cause they came to do drugs and you came to sing. So if you're gonna be the best, I'ma tell you how. Put your hands in the air and take the vow. I know I can,
I know I can
be what I wanna be,
be what I wanna be.
If I work hard at it,
I'll
be where I wanna be. Listen again. This is for grown-looking girls who's only 10. The ones who watch videos and do what they see. As cute as can be, up in the club with fake ID. Careful, for you meet a man with HIV. You can host a TV like Oprah Winfrey. Whatever you decide, be careful, some men be rapists. So act your age, don't pretend to be older than you are. Give yourself time to grow. You're thinking he can give you wealth, but so young boys, you can use a lot of help, you know. You're thinking life's all about smoking f***ing ice. You don't want to be my age and can't read and write. Begging different women for a place to sleep at night. Smart boys turn them in and do whatever they wish. If you believe you can achieve, then say it like this. I know I can,
I know I can
be what I wanna be,
be what I wanna be.
If I work hard at it,
if I work hard at it,
I'll be where I wanna be.
I'll be where I wanna
now,
be.
Go. We came to this country. We were kings and queens, never porch monkeys. There was empires in Africa called Kush, Timbuktu, where every race came to get books to learn from black teachers who taught Greeks and Romans, Asian Arabs, and gave them gold. When gold was converted to money, it all changed. Money then became empowerment for Europeans. The Persian military invaded. They heard about the gold, the teachings, and everything sacred. Africa was almost robbed naked. Slavery was money, so they began making slave ships. Egypt was the place that Alexander the Great went. He wasn't shocked that the mountains were black faces. Shot up their nose to impose what basically still goes on today, you see. If the truth is told, the youth can grow. They'll learn to survive until they gain control. Nobody says you have to be gangsters. Read more, learn more, change the globe. Ghetto children, do your thing. Hold your head up, little man, you're a king. Young princess, when you get your wedding ring, your man is saying, she's my queen. I know I can,
I know I can
be what I wanna be,
be what I wanna be.
If I work hard at it,
if I work hard at it,
I'll be where I wanna be. Save the music, y'all. Save the music, y'all. Save the music, y'all. Save the music.
Save the children, y'all. The recipe for literacy in the black community, live on Tribe Family Channel, is being brought to you by Gumbo for the Soul Literacy Program and Gumbo for the Soul International. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I am Beverly Black, and I'm the creator of Gumbo for the Soul International. Tribe Family Channel is one of our family brands, and it is my honor, privilege, and pleasure to host what is supposed to be a round table, provided the other people can break away that are expected this evening on this segment of The Recipe for Literacy in the Black Community, so named after the first installment of the series anthologies out of the Gumbo for the Soul publications series in 2005. This book was published. Now, this show is in honor of Kelly Williams Bolar, who is a parent and an advocate. We started this show to keep her voice alive and to continue with the message. Kelly is still with us, but we wanted to keep this message going as well. Kelly Williams Bolar is an Akron, Ohio-based single mother. Bolar made headlines in 2011 when she was arrested and later convicted for sending her two daughters outside of their school district, which was in a safer and more affluent area of Ohio. Since her incident, Bolar has made guest appearances, reliving her unsettling experience on various news stations and talk shows like Dr. Phil, Roland Martin, MSNBC, Fox, and CNN. Kelly is expected to make it to this conversation, but in the event that she doesn't, we will hold her up in our prayers and continue on with the conversation. Now, we are sponsored by Mr. Larry D. Davis. He is also an author, and hopefully he'll be able to make this conversation as well, as I had looked forward to being able to introduce them to our special guest and to be able to hear the dialogue bridges the eras in which they all experienced their traumatic stories, being that Kelly Williams Bolar experienced her traumatic story with the educational system in 2011. Our special guest tonight is one of the Tougaloo Nine, Mrs. Geraldine Hollis. I am truly fond of this woman, and in 1961, the Tougaloo Nine set in the Tougaloo College Library to desegregate it to make it possible for folk like you and I to be able to enter into the library and read books and check them out as everyone else. And it's so ironic, because when I was going through some times in my own life where I experienced some struggles, it was also while the first book in the Gumbo for the Soul series was being compiled, and that is The Recipe for Literacy in the Black Community. And during those times, I actually had to utilize the library, which I loved anyway, because I became a Bay Area parent and tutor at the Martin Luther King Jr. Library downtown San Jose in California, for those listeners that are outside of the California area. So just to tie in literacy, the library system, and being able to have this format is a blessing. Now, I want to shout out our sponsors. We are honored for those that make this show possible. One is Mrs. Geraldine Hollis. She supports Tribe Family Channel, and she is also one of our hosts for Voices of Wisdom. Also, we are sponsored by the gentleman I mentioned earlier, Mr. Larry D. Davis. He is the author of The Reeducation of the African American Child in Today's School System. And we are also sponsored in part by Power Tax, Mr. Stephen Hutchinson. He is also a host on Tri-Family Channels Network. His website is PowerTax2X's.com. Shout out to Stephen Hutchinson of Power Tax, and his show is Financial Intelligence with Stephen Hutchinson coming up this Monday. So be sure to catch his show. So now, ladies and gentlemen, our sponsors and the would-be co-host has not arrived, but We're not going to let that stop this conversation. We are going to catch up with Mrs. Geraldine Hollis. Her show has been on a summer break. Voices of Wisdom is now in its, what, going on its fourth season? No, I'm sorry, going on its eighth season. So we just closed out season seven, and the last show aired May 3rd. But you can go to our studio, blogtalkradio.com/gumbo for the soul. And if you put in the search box Voices of Wisdom, you will see the last season lineup of Voices of Wisdom, season seven, hosted by Mrs. Geraldine Hollis. And she had another one of the Tougaloo Nine co-hosting with her, Mr. Jesse Jackson Sr. So, and he is one of the Tougaloo Nine, not to be confused with Pastor Jesse Jackson. And so we really want to thank the two of them for being there and holding down the show and just really, really keeping us abreast and in touch with what the Tougaloo Nine were all about. And I don't, excuse me, not Jesse Jackson, Mr. Joseph Jackson Jr. So be sure to Google or chime in and you will be able to listen and catch up with those shows. And so what I'm going to do in Ms. Kelly Williams-Bolars' absence is I'm going to bring on our sponsor, Mr. Larry D. Davis, and he and I are going to run the dialogue. So let us proceed. How are you doing this evening, Mr. Larry D. Davis? I was just talking about you.
I am blessed, and thank you for having me. I apologize for running late, but this Dallas traffic had me backed up a little bit. But I'm here.
You know what? And you are right on time because, as you can tell, just doing the introductions, and so thankful and grateful for your presence. As you know, it is always an honor, and I love to hear the conversations and the dialogue. So tell our listeners a little bit about who you are and what it is you do, and then we are going to welcome our special guest, Mrs. Geraldine Hollis, one of the Tougaloo Nine from the 1961 Tougaloo College Library sit-in.
I'm going to start off like this, Ms. Black. I'm a man of God foremost. I place God and my faith above everything because everything I have in my life I've been blessed by God to have. I'm a father, I'm a family man, and then I'm an educator. I've been a high school teacher, I've been an assistant principal, I've been a house principal, I've been a district coordinator for school improvement, I've been a district coordinator for college career readiness, CTE, and IB programs, and currently I'm a regional superintendent of education. And all my schools this year under the Texas rating got a rating of an A, which is the best rating you can possibly get, and one of my schools was recognized as one of the top performing schools in the state of Texas.
Wow, yes, yes, yes. And you know what? Not only do we applaud and salute you, but those students that are making a difference and learning on purpose, we salute them too. And all of your staff that are working together to make sure that that village is strengthening the education and the life of those children. So I salute you, salute your staff and constituents and all of the students. That is very good to hear. Now, the reason why I find it so intriguing to have these types of conversations is because, one, we can agree to disagree. There are so many different dynamics and layers of discussion that we can entertain in this current landscape when it comes to education, both past and present. And that is one of the reasons why Tri-Family Channel strives to bridge the gap, because we strive to bring forth history and knowledge and the type of sage wisdom that may have been lost through the ages. But thankfully, we have the forerunners and those that have paved the way, folk whose shoulders we stand on, who have broken the barriers, that have sacrificed and opened the doors, and that have literally risked their lives, limb, and safety to enjoy the freedom that we partake in today. So I know oftentimes we don't realize that there was a time when it was illegal for Black people to read in this country. It had been made a law that Black people at that particular time were considered Negro and were called N-I-G-G-A, or more derogatory, N-I-G-G-E-R. And there was that period of time in which we were banned from education, from reading, and before Jim Crow and during slavery, you could lose life and limb for being caught acquiring an education or anything of intelligence. The only thing our existence was to speak of was work on plantations, okay, and factories and where everything else, anything. Look around this whole country. Just look at it. We built this. So I'm not going to get too militant tonight, but we're going to go back into an era of time. And in that era of time, there were people fighting for our civil rights. We didn't have the right to an education. We didn't have a right to go into a school building. And then fast forward, when we did get to a building, there was still segregation. The white restrooms, the Black restrooms, the white water fountains, the Black water fountains, the Blacks that couldn't go into this whites-only library, which brings us to the 1961 Tougaloo College Library sit-in. Ladies and gentlemen, live on Tribe Family Channel, the Recipe for Literacy in the Black Community, it is our honor, privilege, and pleasure to bring to you one of the Tougaloo Nine, Mrs. Geraldine Hollis. Hello, Mrs. Geraldine Hollis. How are you this evening? Greetings.
Well, greetings to you, Miss Beverly. I'm just great today. And it's just such an honor to be able to speak with your audience and to be able to interact and have a conversational dialogue.
Ms. Geraldine, let me just say this. It is always our honor, privilege, and pleasure to have you. As I've said before, you are one of our fondest supporters of Tribe Family Channel, and you were there from the beginning when Gumbo for the Soul was started. You had to refresh my itty-bitty mind because we have been speaking for years, but you reminded me that you had reached out to me some years back. But it is my honor first to introduce you to Mr. Larry D. Davis out of Texas, and he is the superintendent, as you've heard him speak of the different accolades that he has accomplished with his children in the school district. So it's an honor first to introduce you to this man. Mr. Larry D. Davis, please say hello to Mrs. Geraldine Hollis.
Ms. Hollis, I'm going to tell you,
yes.
I'm in awe right now. I'm speechless. But if I could, Ms. Black, I want to say one thing. I hope every one of your listeners just listened to her when she came on. That is what's missing from our culture, that politeness, that class in the way she spoke, the elegance in the way she introduced herself and acknowledged you. I mean, where is that missing? We got to get back to teaching our children those principles. That was impressive, and I am just in awe sitting here listening to you. So don't focus on me. I want to hear about Miss Hollis. Please.
Well, thank you so much. I guess I do interact with Miss Beverly often, and I just love being there for whatever. I love being able to do what I do most. And that is one word, enlighten. Enlighten. There are so many who do not know, don't know that they don't know, and nobody to really tell them what they need to know. So if I can just make a little spark of interest in someone about life through learning, it really makes my day. So congratulations to you, Mr. Davis, for all of the accomplishments that you have made. And it's just great to know that we still have really dedicated educators out there. And I don't want to be biased, but I love it when we have our men who are there to really lead the way, because one of the things that we are having in our school systems that I found out is that there is a lack of mentors for our young men who don't see, but those that are not very well reared to lead them down, or should I say up, the path towards accomplishment. So thank you.
You are very welcome. And you know what? When you said those things, I felt like, I don't, who is she talking about? This is humbling, Miss Black. This is so humbling. Miss Hollis, can I ask you a question? I'm not trying to steal the show, Miss Black, but several years back, I had an opportunity to have lunch with Ernest Green of the Little Rock Nine.
Okay.
And I asked him at lunchtime, I said, Mr. Green, and he said, call me Ernest. I said, well, Ernest, and this is right after President Clinton had given him the Congressional Medal of Honor. I said, did you realize that you were becoming a hero? Did you realize that you were becoming an icon? Did you realize the significance of what you were doing when you went to Central High School? And he said, Larry, I just wanted an education.
Yes.
So did you realize the significance of in history of what you were doing at that moment?
I tell you what, living in the South, in Mississippi, in the area that I lived in, I really could see the differences in the things that I was able to experience. And not only was I able to see the differences, but I was able to see those things that I desired to do. And so, as a child, I knew that I wanted to do things that I was not able to do because someone kept me from being able to do those things. And another thing is that living in that era, there was violence, but it wasn't overt violence. It was what you know your place is and what you know that you have to do if you want to be alive or if you want to be safe. And so I learned then that there was something that needed to be changed. And before I really answer your full question, as a girl, I could see the things that other girls were able to do. For instance, when I lived in Louisiana, I could not go to the little places where there was ice cream sold and sit down on those little wire chairs. But they would let me get a cone and stand in the corner or leave out of the place. When I went to Mississippi and as a dancer, my teacher took me to a dance studio that was not of my ethnicity, and asked the dance teacher if she could just help me. And my teacher was really working with me because she went to Texas Women College in Texas, and every summer she would come back and teach me something different. So she wanted me to learn something. And so this lady of this particular school told me, she says, no, we cannot allow you in here. and I probably could have done better than most of the girls that I saw. But I had never experienced wearing real ballet shoes. And my teacher with whom I came asked this particular teacher, and I'm saying particular because you know what I'm talking about, the denial. And so
right, you're
says,
talking about
well,
white people. We know.
Yes, I am.
You're talking about white people,
yes.
Right? Okay.
<Yes. laughs>
You know how I am, Ms. Geraldine.
I know. You were really on target. However, she said that I could not even have any of the slippers. But my teacher was not going to give up. And she says, well, you have some old ones. Can we just have one of those pairs? And she reluctantly let me have a pair of those old ballet slippers. But what I did with those ballet slippers enabled me to feel the exhilarating feeling of totally standing on my toes. That let me know that if I do not give up and continue to want something and not afraid to do it, that I would be able to accomplish some things. Now, all through my life, I found that I had to make sure that I accomplished something because nobody was giving me anything that I really wanted. So I knew that if I did not get off of the sidewalk when I walked along in some areas, that there would probably be some circumstances. People in that town would have told my family that your daughter or your granddaughter is not being respectful and that you just get out of the way when people come along. You say to them, even if you don't want to be polite, you say yes, sir, or no, sir. And so one of those times that my dad wanted to chastise me over that, he asked me,
wait for a
yes.
second, because I know you're not going to forget that. So this is a good time for
okay.
me to come in about something that you mentioned. So pin that about when your dad chastised you. When your teacher persisted, was that moment where in her persistence you were being shown that, and I know you don't like, you know, the blatant tones that I might use, but, you know, I don't have the class and elegance and etiquette that you do. I'm from the streets, so I'm just going to say it straight out. Were you being shown at that particular time how to address white folk to get what you want, how to be persistent, how to be unrelentless about it? Is that one of those pivotal moments, would you say, that your teacher may have been showing you that if you want something in this world, you're going to have to stay on these white folks' back until they release it?
In a way, she did that. I would say that in a way she did. That's the results of it. But with
uh-huh.
this particular teacher, she was one of the mentors that I really have to let everyone know that she made a difference for me. That was just
mm-hmm.
one of those moments. But I knew all along that we had to work towards getting what we needed because they didn't sell things to you. You couldn't find them anywhere. But at least she let me know that this was a possibility. So,
and that the shoes even existed to begin with, because
yes,
until
yes.
you're exposed to something, you don't have any clue as to the type of tools in which you can go about creating that purpose that's planted down inside you. And for you to be a young girl knowing that you wanted to, you know, have this ballet, it's in you, and you're trying to get it out of you to dance and fly through the air on your toes. And you already know that this is what you want to do as a little girl, and to be given that liberty by being given the tools, the right tool for the right job, and that's
right
those
tool.
Ballet shoes. Yeah, those ballet
right.
shoes. So, all right. Well, if you don't have any comments, tell us about your dad. Did you get a whooping?
Oh, yes. He started. He started with his spanking. It was a more of a, it wasn't quite a spanking. But while he was giving me those licks, he kept asking me, now, yes, sir. And I was doing my little crying. And so he says, can't you say yes, sir? I looked at him and I said, no, I just can't say no, sir.
Lord, have mercy. Okay, so now wait a minute.
And he stopped.
Ooh, Lord.
He stopped spanking me. And he started laughing because he knew he had something on his hand. My dad, he knew he had something on his hand.
And I'm really feeling it because I know, like I said, did you get a whooping? But I'm being comical because, see, I'm in a different era. When I got a spanking, it was because, you know, I did something I had no business doing. Now, what you're telling me is that your father was trying to teach you that if you are to, if I'm going to keep you alive in this time, girl, I got to teach you to say yes, sir, if I got to beat you. And you said no. And he let you alone because he knew that he was not going to break your spirit, and neither was these white people. Ladies and gentlemen,
yes.
If you're just tuning in, you are live with the Tougaloo 9, Mississippi civil rights icon, Mrs. Geraldine Hollis, our special guest on the Recipe for Literacy in the Black Community. I'm Beverly Black. I created Tribe Family Channel, Gumbo for the Soul Literacy Program, the Recipe for Literacy in the Black Community, in reference to our series anthologies, and we are brought to you by Gumbo for the Soul International, and you can visit us online at gumbofortheSoulInternational.com. Now, it just got real, real up in here. Oh, my God. Your father is trying to keep you alive, and he knew that if he hit you again, I mean, he can't beat you to death. And he's not going to break your spirit. So take us back to that time when he started laughing. He whooped you, and you said, no, I'm not going to say yes, sir. And he started laughing because he couldn't whoop that spirit out of you. Mrs. Geraldine Hollis, you are a piece of work.
Well, Miss Beverly, actually my dad sort of knew that. I was the first child. And for you, Mr. Davis, I was the first child, and I was a girl. Everyone else that came along was a boy. And there were things that boys could do that they didn't expect girls to do. But if I couldn't do it better than them, I would certainly try. So my dad knew the kind of person that I was, and I just had that in me. So it wasn't that I was afraid of the whites, but I respected what was necessary in order to be able to live correctly. But that didn't dampen my spirit. There were so many things that growing up I had an advantage of because I was able to be perceptive of what was happening and to be able to walk around it. And being the oldest child and a girl with all of the boys behind me, there ended up being five boys and my mother's children. I can't add the others because my mother passed and my dad married again, and he had three more boys and a girl at the end. But I was still that oldest child, and I was still that female. So my dad brought me up actually to think like a boy. I was not a tomboy, but he brought me up to be able to know that I had to move forward in my life, and whatever I wanted, I had to be able to go for it and do my best to be there or to get that. So
now
far as living and doing that civil rights era was a challenge, but it was yet still it was something that I felt very comfortable with, because growing up, not only did I study a lot, but I read a lot. I really actually ate the stories up. And there was just so much to tell about my life, but just to give you a synopsis of what it was all about for me. When I was in high school, they had things like, what do you call them, the timeout study hall. Mr. Davis, I did not go to study hall from ninth grade through the 12th. I took a class every period. And I was also an athlete, still working with that particular teacher. I would go in and show her class how to do the exercises that she had taught me. So I was always a person that was out there doing things. So I find myself as being, I was always a little bit different than most people. And so
when
I finished high school, you had 18. They had 18 units for graduation. I think I had 21. They didn't let you graduate early back then because of the units. So when I finished high school, I had more units than I needed to graduate. So that's that was a part of me.
Let me jump in because that's a lot that we can unpack. I don't have the exact words, but I want to paraphrase back to what you said, your father, you know, the teaching, that it was, he taught you, you said something about it was necessary. It was a level of respect that was necessary. I don't remember your exact words, but that in itself, it just resonates. Because, again, what Mr. Davis said is you have a level of class and elegance and respectability about yourself. Where did that go? It's lost. And when we're here to try to bridge that gap between true school and new school. Big Mama and Nana and the grandmothers of yesterday, they've gone on, and the gap in between grandparents raising millennials and the disparaging, their disparaging reaction to an era of time. Let's talk about the crack era and what broke apart families, because that's the era in which, you know, our babies started entering into the system more rapidly and being turned over to grandparents. So that's where we're missing the type of teachings and the sage wisdom and elegance that we're hearing Mrs. Geraldine Hollis evoke here, Mr. Davis. Now, you said so many things. I could just touch on so much. Growing up in this period of time where you knew that there was this respectability that you had to have, and your family had to maintain. You talked about sharing the sidewalk, and I want you to shout out your book when I turn the mic back over to you. But tell us about that period of time when you didn't have access to the luxuries that you see today. I know today you're world traveled, but how was it to be confined to certain geographics and certain buildings and certain amenities that were less than, and having to move out of the way so a white person can have the privilege of staying on the sidewalk and not stepping into the street, or having to look them in the eye or not, or even address the yes sir or yes ma'am as though this other human being is some sort of god, when you can see plain as day that they're no different in any regard than any other human being. Take us back to that time.
Beverly, the main thing I think that resonates with me is that I had a determination. And I think that that's one of the things that a lot of our young people don't have, because they, when you are exposed to so much and you think that you're really, you should, you are entitled to so much, and I'm saying this because I still work with children as a volunteer, mm-hmm. working with the church and things. Children mm-hmm. now take everything for granted. They just feel as though they can say what they want to say, do what they want to do. And a lot of the facts are that the parents think that it's cute, and they celebrate over the things that they are able to do. But when I came along, I knew that there were some guidelines that I had to deal with. There were some walks that I had to walk. There were some abilities that I had to accomplish. And so growing up makes a big difference. But even though I'm telling you this, I'm going to share something else with you. I just mm-hmm. finished with the church program, which was the Vacation Bible School. And I work with children there. And this gentleman came up to me, and he said, "Oh, I know who you are. You look just like your granddaughter." And then he turned around, he said, "Your granddaughter looked just like you." And he says, "The way you stand, she stands just like that. The way you talk, she talks just like that." But now, I had one granddaughter. I never spanked her in her whole life.
But come on now.
I worked with her from the time that I knew she was conceived. I was going to mm-hmm. work with that child. Although I knew that I wanted to retire early and do things, I made myself available to that child because I knew that she had to walk in a world that she needed to learn and know some things. So I had her sitting lonely at 6 months. She was walking at a year. No, not walking. She was jumping for joy, which was an activity that we did. And she jumped for joy. She didn't just stand there. She learned to jump up. And there was training and learning going on all through these things. So I'm saying the way you work with your children, the things that you mm-hmm. teach them, the things you introduce them to, these are the kinds of things that sort of resonate in who they are also. So she didn't really want to be a teacher, but she is ending up now teaching. She didn't like little children, but she's ending up working with the preschoolers.
Wait before you go on. Before you go on, now, from the time she was a baby, you were working with her, her cognitive thinking, her mobility, everything. And
yes.
So this man says, "I know who you are. I know who you are. All you have to do is look at the tree if you want to know about the fruit." So I had to get that out. And then also, you know, people find it strange when you have a child that you haven't whooped. My daughter has never had a spanking in her life. And I remember a lady telling me, "Oh, that's what's wrong. Oh, is that what's wrong? Or is that your purview?" Okay.
Yes.
And if you meet my daughter, you will see a reflection. You won't know right away that, "Oh, mm-hmm, that's Beverly's daughter," because she has a more reserved, you know, reference of thought, and she's quiet and more observant. And what she has to say, it comes from an angle of analysis, of critical thinking, you know. And so I also want to say that I commend you for working with these children and being that bridge in this gap, in their learning, in their walk in life, in their reaction to the adversities of life, and in their, not just their reaction to life, but in their action, what they need to take active involvement in their lives to have a purpose-driven, fruitful life. So I want to commend you for that. I myself, and also you, Mr. Davis, for working with these children. I'm going to tell you, I'd be the parent in the office Ms. Black, I know you didn't tell that child that, yes, I did, okay? And I requested their parents come up here so I could say it in front of them. And they need to back up my statement. I cannot work with these children if I cannot have their parents' support. And since I'm from that era in which you all are dealing with, the parents that you're dealing with today, they're my peers. So you can best believe we'd have some serious meetings up in there because I can relate. I know what they've been through. And I know why they react the way they react. You know why? Because somewhere inside of them is, one, the fear of failing, the fear of refusing. A lot of people don't even want to tell their child no. I will sing it to you in a song, write it in a lyric, pin it on your forehead. The answer is no to the N and the O. And these kids are so spoiled and so detached from the respectability and the reaction that they're supposed to give rise to what they're being afforded. If we look back on the time that you came up, in the time that I came up, we didn't have gadgets. We didn't even have Star 69.
No.
You know, we didn't have a push button. We didn't have press one for yes, press two for no. We didn't have cable. We didn't have 24-hour anything. Things went off. We had a life. We went to bed at night. We got up in the morning.
That's true.
We weren't under the blankets with no gas. If we were under the blankets, it was with a flashlight and a book, okay?
That's so, exactly right.
So it's an entirely different era, but I would love to be able to somehow liaison in the areas that you and Mr. Davis work in to help bring some relatability to the parents, because I speak their language and I understand, you know, what they may be going through. And also the youth, you know, when you understand what the youth have gone through because of said parents or that era and period of time of either privilege or neglect, when you understand where they're coming from and you can relate, then you win them. You'll win people over because they don't care what you know until they know that you care. If I can't tell that you care, I don't care.
Miss Beverly, one of the things that you're saying, and it is so true, it's not always what you teach them, it's what you make them feel, how you make them feel. And if you let them know that you are proud of their accomplishments, that you give them a comment or a thank you or let them know that they're doing a great job. Most times the kids are messing up or not being or paying attention. The main thing people want to do is tell them what to do and tell them you this, that, and all that. And I will look at the others and I'll say, you know what? You all sure are doing a great job of listening over here. I really do appreciate that. Now, why they're doing the things they're doing is to get your attention. So when you refocus your attention to what you desire and what you would expect, I find that there is a lot more being done or being accomplished because they are getting what they want. And in the meantime, we can get what we want.
Amen, amen.
So that's how we make them feel.
And I like what you said. Let me just say this, and then I'll let you come on in, Mr. Davis, because I know you have a lot. But I like what you said, Mrs. Geraldine, about, you know, giving them kudos for listening and the fact that, you know, they're seeking attention. When you see that there's a hunger, you can kind of pinpoint what might be missing without being invasive, you know, but the main thing is to unlock what's going on inside of that child and find out what they want to be. And when you unlock their aspirations, you become an inspiration. Go ahead, Mr. Davis, because I've been waiting for you to, you know, he's letting us dialogue, but I know he has a lot to say. So now I'm going to sit back and listen.
Well, mine is, you know, first of all, Ms. Hollis, you're exactly right. Google can teach content. We need teachers who teach children. And so we got to get there. They can find content on the internet. And I did a little research on you, so, you know, because I didn't want to be just totally, you know, in the dark. So not only did you host the Voice of Wisdom, you are the Voice of Wisdom. Let me give you that. And in one of your interviews, you said that when you got ready to go to, when you graduated high school, you had three choices. Now, I'm just like, you're right. One was be a doctor, be a minister, or be a teacher. Is that right?
Yes.
And now today, our children have choices they know nothing about, and they're afraid to explore those choices. What would you say to a young person today who knows in 4 years from now there'll be 200 jobs that exist that don't exist today compared to when you, like you said, you had three choices?
I'm very much informed by the young people because I have not really let go of them. Thank you. And I think that's why I brought in the fact that I volunteer with working with the children for Vacation Bible School, and I've done some other things. I volunteer at schools. I go in and not this year, but I've gone in and I've just been a parent or an adult in a classroom where there were children. And I look at the children and I always interact with them. One thing is okay to give them directions and give them information, but what you are asking me is just what I find that works best. Go ahead and talk to them. Ask them questions. And for you, Miss Beverly, you remember when my daughter Maida Smith there at the Juneteenth program, and she told everybody that one of the things that I always ask her is, who are you?
Mm-hmm.
And I would ask her that over and over and over. When she would give me one answer, I would give her another question, who are you? And I wanted to dwell in her mind that she is somebody, that what she see or what she feel or what she know that she wants to do has to be able to come out of her, because nobody can know who she is unless she know who she is. And I think that right now our young people are given so much. People want to put everything on them. They don't give them a chance to really see how they feel about things. My granddaughter loves to draw. So when she went to school, she wanted to be an artist. And we let her choose to be an artist. But what she really found out here lately is that she likes sharing with other people. But she also has a talent of being an artist. And so we have to let people really know what they can do. And if we find out what they can do, then we, Mr. Davis, I do believe can move it into a workable or a commercial or either something that we can let them know that this is what is the root stem of this. I told some of the young people the other day, I say, my goodness, you know, you are really great. You are great with numbers. Now, what can you do with numbers?
And let me also say to what you're saying, Mrs. Geraldine, if I can jump in, with my own children, let me also say this for the parents that are listening. You have to stand on the battlefield for your children. And when I say that, I mean not only in terms of them going to school and them knowing that you have their best interests at heart, but at home, like you were telling your daughter or asking your daughter, who are you? You know, so that she can over and over and over and over ponder and bring it out of herself. Who are you? It's in you. Who are you? She has to think on it. Well, in raising my children, I'm so blessed that we didn't have a whole lot of the games and the competition with social media that we have today, thank God. And so in my own observations of my children, I was able to have the time and the space to observe their character, to observe their strengths, to observe their desires, their genius, what they like doing, what they had a gift at doing. These days, people, you know, they're searching for enlightenment. Like you said at the beginning of the show, enlightenment. That is what people are searching for. They are searching to find out what is their purpose, because there's so much noise coming in that they don't sit still long enough and quiet enough to observe who they are, whose they are, and what was planted inside of them from the very beginning. And when you get that opportunity to observe your child and to see what they're good at, and you expose them to an environment where they get that opportunity to develop what's inside of them and not be crowded out by the noise, then you provided an opportunity for them to learn, to develop, and to enrich what is going on inside of them, and then to bring that seed that's planted up and out. And I'll give you a case in point, and then I'll turn it back over to you. My children didn't know when they were growing up that there was Saturday morning cartoons. I never let them know. So on Saturday mornings, they just never knew that, and I knew, but I never let them know. And when they found out, and they didn't know about cartoons until, like, Nickelodeon came on, you see. So okay. When Nickelodeon came on, and Nick at Night and Nick Jr. and, you know, cable and everything's on 24 hours, that's when, by then, I've already got them in their formative years, you see. So they didn't grow up on the Saturday morning cartoons that I grew up on. They grew up with learning and playing and interacting and going outside on the weekends. So I yield the mic back to the discussion that I would like to witness between you and Mr. Larry Davis.
Ms. Hollis, you also said in your interview that you would pick up any book you could find because you love knowledge. With so much technology at our fingertips for our children, what can we do to nurture our children back to have a love for reading?
You have me on that, because one of the things that I noticed is that children do not really, really love to read. Now, when I find that they really enjoy reading, I ask them questions about it. And this is just to get them to think. And I come from a family that, and I can just, I can only probably relate to my family, but I have a niece in Mississippi who has read thousands of books, and I think that she's only 11 years old. And I have a niece that's here in California. She reads, I mean, she could be at a ball game and she still has a book. In fact, both those nieces have a book with them no matter where they are. They have something to read. They both have cell phones, but the parents regulate those, just hold them in their hands. They have them and get them when they're going out to do something or to have something that they are going to have it for, or to respond to something or someone. So I think that we still have to be there to give our children what they need, but also we've got to be able to mentor them and regulate them and give them some guidelines that they should be dealing with. Reading for me, it was the only escape that I had, because if there was television, it wasn't, like you said, it would be off at 10 o'clock at night, 11, maybe go off by 12, but I wasn't going to be up at that time of night. And it would come on in the early morning, and there wasn't a lot of things that you could really enjoy until Saturday. Other than maybe which is still on now, Long Rangers or something like that or whatever. But I read, and I did, I could read anything. And I was one of those kids where my dad would tell me, hey, put that light out. And I'd say, okay. And, boy, flashlight under the blanket. And that was it. And also, when the library opened in the high school, the new library, I think that my friend and I, we raced to see who could check out the most books. So we had to have a yearning to want to know these things. One of the reasons why we wanted to know these things is because, see, we couldn't see everything. We didn't have newspapers that came out all of the time to share with you some things. We didn't have the comic page or whatever. But I remember listening at the radio at the some of those shows that would tell you everything. They had all of everything that you had to hear. To be able to visualize what was happening, you would hear that. If it's something, a wind blowing against a tree, you would hear it squeaking along like that branch hitting on that window pane, squeak, squeak. And you had to imagine that. If you heard people going up the stairs, you hear them. So they put in everything to get your imagination going. So when I started reading things, that made it just really alive to me. And so reading was for me, it was important from the very, well, I think second grade. That's when I learned about run. What was that name of that dog? Well, anyway,
run, spot, run.
See, spot, run. Oh, and I love reading it. The teacher couldn't get me enough of those. She said, please don't go any further. Just read that over, because I wanted to read the whole book. So, yeah. But you got to find a way to get them to really want to do these things. And if you've given everything, and you can, right now, if you see a movie, they're going to have everything all in there until you really can't even imagine what it takes to get all those things going. So,
I'm just looking back at my life. Now, I don't want to hold you, but I know that you have an engagement, and we have come up to the top of the hour, so I don't want time to get away from us. But, you know, give our listeners a shout-out as to where they can pick up your book. What's the name of your book, and where can they find you? And I just want to thank you once again for taking out this time. We may have to do a part two so that we can definitely have Ms. Kelly Williams Bolar and you dialogue about the eras and experiences of time that you went through. But shout out your information for us.
Okay, Geraldine Hollis. And I tell people, basically, you can Google me. I'm just thankful that you can Google me. There wasn't a time that you could do that, but now you can. And my book is Back to Mississippi, and the website is www.backtomississippi.com. And the second book is March Memories. And just for the audience, the Back to Mississippi is a 300-page book, and March Memories is a book that has a much more detailed things in it. It's like 85 pages. However, the book is to invite you to come on that journey with me, and it tells you about yesteryear was where it started in terms of remembrances. And I really wrote the March Memories because there are people that are so busy they don't really, really want to read. But I give a day-by-day synopsis of memories that I could come back and bring to life to help people to see why I did what I did, how it was possible, and the degree of circumstances that we had to deal with, and we knew that we were literally dealing with our life. So we
wow.
can move forward, but we must look back, seeing from where we come, access where we are on the road to making the trip a full appreciation by taking a part in the process and making it a personal quest and journey. And that's what March Memories bring out for the readers.
Now, we would be remiss, and thank you so much, not to take up too much more of your time, but we would be remiss not to ask you, what was it like meeting the legendary, great Medgar Evers and being trained by him?
It was very comforting. In fact, Megan was the type of person, you didn't have all these accolades and everything. He was a down-to-earth person. He really was. We didn't think of him. I didn't think of him as just some legend or whatever. He was a person that really came in there and worked with us for the time that he did. And then that was an experience that I had pretty much through school and even at Tougaloo, that people were willing to help us, to be able to mentor us, motivate us, and get us started, to get our mind thinking about things. And Mega was like that. When everything was over, and after the Tougaloo 9 sit-in and everything, Megar has something for each one of us to do. And for me, he sent me to Washington, D.C. alone, first trip, so that I could share my experiences with some of the people there in Washington. And he made sure that I was able to have that experience. So he was just an awesome person, and he was all about the community. He was all about civil rights. He was all about the rights, and it was not just about what we did. It was about getting people out to vote, getting people so that they could be able to share what they need and to be able to do the things they needed to do in order to move forward in life. And the first thing was, let's get them to vote.
Wow. Excuse me. All right. Well, thank you so, so very much. I want to invite Mr. Larry D. Davis to give a final comment to you and to our listening audience, and to let us know where he can be located, and again, the title of his book. And we want to thank you once again, Mrs. Geraldine Hollis, one of the Tougaloo 9 from the Mississippi Library sit-in, Tougaloo College Library sit-in, for being here with us on the Recipe for Literacy in the Black Community. God bless you, and we will be looking forward to Voices of Wisdom Season 8. Starting September 6th, hosted by none other than Mrs. Geraldine Hollis of the Tougaloo 9. So thank you so much again. Now, Mr. Larry D. Davis, final thoughts that you may have for Mrs. Geraldine Hollis, and then your shout out.
It's been an honor just listening to you. My life has been enriched just listening to what you had to say and the things that you had to go through, and the things that you now have to share with our youth and people my age. We have a connection. I graduated from Texas Women's University, where
okay.
Your teacher went to school.
Okay.
Miss Black, I want you to make sure I get her information, because I want to send her a copy of my book, The Reeducation of the African-American Child in Today's School System.
Absolutely.
Because she touched on so many things in there. She touched on recognition, relationships, remembering who you are, and all those are in that book about the 6 R's when it comes to teaching our children. And I mean,
okay.
So I want to make sure she gets a copy of that. And I'm headed to Illinois next Monday at the Administration of Supervision Curriculum Development Conference in Oaklawn, Illinois, which is right next to Chicago. I'll be doing a conference there. I'm doing 2 sessions. One is working with our 4D students, which is defiant, difficult, disruptive, and disrespectful. And the other one is targeted campus instruction that works. You can find me on LarryDDavis.com, and you can find my book on LarryDDavis.com, as well as Amazon and Barnes & Noble. The book is The Reeducation of the African-American Child in Today's School System. Ms. Black, thank you, and Ms. Hollis, I am humbled.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much.
I am deeply humbled, grateful, and honored to both of you, and I want to remind our listeners that you can catch up with me at GumboForTheSoulInternational.com. We're also on Facebook.com/TribeFamilyChannel. We have a call for submissions coming out for our Gumbo for the Soul publications, our anthology series. Dave Chappelle's mother, Dr. Yvonne Sion, has penned the foreword for Gumbo for the Soul, Women of Honor 2. We are honoring women. We are talking about our health and wellness. So please visit GumboForTheSoulInternational.com for details. And I want to thank both of you and remind our listeners that they can listen to the archives of this show. Follow our studio at blogtalkradio.com/GumboForTheSoul. Now, Mr. Davis and Mrs. Geraldine, I just sent an email to both of you thanking you for being on the show. That way you are now connected and you can dialogue with each other. So thank you once again for being here on our show, and we will see you again when we come back to the airwaves this Sunday, Restore with Mrs. Wanda Burnside and Ms. Ramel T. Lee. Until then, you be blessed, be a blessing, and have a great weekend. God bless you, and thank you once again.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Architect, doctor, maybe an actress, but nothing comes easy. It takes much practice. Like, I met a woman who's becoming a star. She was very beautiful, leaving people in awe. Singing songs, Lena Horne, but the younger version. Hung with the wrong person, got a strong on that. Sniffing up drugs, all in her nose. Could have died so young, now looks ugly and old. No fun, cause now when she reaches for hugs, people hold their breath, cause she smells of corrosion and death. Watch the company you keep and the crowds you bring, cause they came to do drugs and you came to sing. So if you're gonna be the best, I'ma tell you how. Put your hands in the air and take the vow. I know I can,
I know I can.
Be what I wanna be,
be what I wanna be.
If I work hard at it,
I'll
be where I wanna be. Listen again. This is for grown-looking girls who's only 10. The ones who watch videos and do what they see. As cute as can be, up in the club with fake ID. Careful, for you meet a man with HIV. You can host a TV like Oprah Winfrey. Whatever you decide, be careful, some men be rapists. So act your age, don't pretend to be older than you are. Give yourself time to grow. You're thinking he can give you wealth, but so young boys. You can use a lot of help, you know. You're thinking life's all about smoking f***ing ice. You don't want to be my age and can't read and write. Begging different women for a place to sleep at night. Smart boys turn them in and do whatever they wish. If you believe you can achieve, then say it like this. I know I can,
I know I can.
Be what I wanna be,
be what I wanna be.
If I work hard at it,
I'll
be where I wanna be.
Now,
go.
We came to this country, we were kings and queens, never porch monkeys. There was empires in Africa called Kush, Timbuktu, where every race came to get books to learn from black teachers who taught Greeks and Romans, Asian Arabs, and gave them gold. When gold was converted to money, it all changed. Money then became empowerment for Europeans. The Persian military invaded, they heard about the gold, the teachings, and everything sacred. Africa was almost robbed naked. Slavery was money, so they began making slave ships. Egypt was the place that Alexander the Great went. He wasn't shocked that the mountains were black faces. Shot up their nose to impose what basically still goes on today, you see. If the truth is told, the youth can grow. They'll learn to survive until they gain control. Nobody says you have to be gangsters. Read more, learn more, change the globe. Ghetto children, do your thing. Hold your head up, little man, you're a king. Young princess, when you get your wedding ring, your man is saying, she's my queen.
I know I can,
I know I can.
Be what I wanna be,
be what I wanna.
I work hard at it.
I'll
be where I wanna be.
Tri-Family Channel, Tri-Family Channel, oh.